Okay, it will be 2 Samuel chapter 10. Let's pray. Father, I ask for your guidance this morning as we look at your word. I pray that you would indeed be our teacher and help us to understand the things that are written and to apply them properly to our hearts. Help us to walk in your way. Amen. Chapter 10 says, "And it came to pass after this that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hanan his son reigned in his stead. Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanan the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me. And David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father. And David's servants came into the land of the children of Ammon. And the princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanan, their lord, Thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he hath sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee to search the city, and to spy it out, and to overthrow it? Wherefore Hanan took David's servants, and shaved off the one half of their beards, and cut off their garments in the middle, even to their buttocks, and sent them away. When they told it unto David, he sent to meet them, because the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, Tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown, and then return. And when the children of Ammon saw that they stank before David, the children of Ammon sent and hired the Syrians of Beth-Rohab and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 footmen, and of King Maacah, 1,000 men, and of Ishtob, 12,000 men. And when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. And the children of Ammon came out and put the battle in array at the entering in of the gate. And the Syrians of Zobah and Rehob and Ishtob and Maacah were by themselves in the field. When Joab saw that the front of the battle was against him before and behind, he chose of all the choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. And the rest of the people he delivered into the hand of Abishai his brother, that he might put them in array against the children of Ammon. And he said, If the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. But if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. Be of good courage, and let us play the man for our people and for the cities of our God, and the Lord do that which seemeth him good. And Joab drew nigh, and the people that were with him, unto the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the children of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fled, they fled also before Abishai, and entered into the city. So Joab returned from the children of Ammon, and came to Jerusalem. And when the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together, and had Arezer sent, and brought out the Syrians that were beyond the river. And they came to Helam, and Shobek, the captain of the host of Hadadezer, went before them. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David, and he fought with them. And the Syrians fled before Israel, and David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen, and smote Shobek, the captain of the host, who died there. And when all the kings that were servants to Hadarezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon any more." I had said a couple meetings ago that we were going to be coming very shortly to the story of the children of Ammon coming against Israel. And of course, you remember this is the children of Ammon are the sons of Lot. It was the Moabites and the Ammonites who came from Lot and his two daughters, forming two nations who God had told Israel that they were not to bother them at all, because God had not given them their land. He had given it to the children of Lot. However, in these later years, we find that Israel is at war with these people, not because they have decided to possess their land, but because these people, very simply, have other gods. And every person on this earth, whether they know it or not, if they are not a worshiper of the true God, they are a worshiper of God's enemy, Satan. And when you put your hand, when you put yourself into Satan's hands, he will lead you to fight his battles, whether you know it or not. So the Moabites and the Ammonites, because they did not serve the true God, they served false gods. Israel has to be their enemy because Israel is Satan's enemy, because it is of the seed of Israel that God is going to bring his son to earth, who is going to accomplish the salvation of man and the judgment of the world, including the judgment of Satan. Satan is against God. He is against God's people. He is against God's plan. He will always, always be against God's plans everywhere. And the moment you step aside from the people of God to the people of the world, you may be with the sweetest people on earth, with the people you think are highly moral, and the people who you can say, you can't say enough good about. Somewhere or another of those people, if they are not serving God, they are under the control of Satan, and Satan is doing his will in their lives. They are servants of his, and Satan is doing his will in their lives. There's a million reasons why Christians should be separate from the world. One of the reasons is because they are under a different God. Even if we cannot find any moral issues whatsoever with our association with them, they are under a different God. So the children of Ammon here have war against Israel because all the nations around Israel had war with Israel. God only sent Israel into the land of Canaan to a specified area that he had mapped out for them to kill some very specified nations that dwelled there, as judgment was to be against those people for their sin. That's all God had sent them to do. But all the nations of Israel, all the nations in the land of Canaan, as well as all the nations round about them, always were at war with Israel. Why? Why, and has it continued up to this very day that the world hates Israel? Because the world is under the leadership of a different God. And that different God, we happen to know his name, he is Satan. And he is against Israel, because God chose Israel. So, as we begin this the chapter here, it says, "It came to pass that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hanan his son reigned in his stead." Now, you have to realize one thing when you're reading through the scriptures, that not always does the scriptures refer to somebody's father as the very next one up in line, the one who had this son. So many times when the scripture is talking about somebody's father, it will mention a grandparent or even on. And so whether or not this Nahash that is mentioned in verse 2 is the father of Hanan, or he perhaps even could be the grandfather of Hanan with another son in between who isn't mentioned in this chapter, we don't really know anything, because we don't have the genealogy of those people. But if you know who Nahash is the king of Ammon who came against the city of Jabesh when Saul had just been anointed king. This is quite a few years ago. We could be almost 60 years from that battle to this day. This chapter neither tells us, it doesn't tell us either at what point of David's history this happened. We have it chronologically listed here in 2 Samuel, but it doesn't say that this happened at this specific point in David's life. But it could have been anywhere from 40 to 60 years, somewhere in between there, that it has been since Nahash led the Ammonites against the city of Jabesh when Saul had just been anointed king. This was an evil man. They led a very, very evil war. The men of Jabesh said, didn't want to fight with them, and said, "Listen, we'll be your servants. We'll come out to you, and you can you can take us for servants." And they said, the Ammonites said no, or they said, "Okay, on this condition, we'll let you come out to us if we can put out all of your right eyes and lay it for a reproach against Israel. Then you can come out and be our servants." This was an evil man that we're talking about here, this Nahash. But I want you to notice how David says this. It says in verse 2, "Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanan, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me. And David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father. And David's servants came into the land of the children of Ammon." David says, "I will show kindness unto Hanan, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me." We do not have a record in any of the scriptures of what happened that David is referring to. But at one point in David's life, the king of the children of Ammon showed David kindness. And this wicked group of people who served other gods, who had come against Israel numerous times since Israel had been a nation, had come against Israel completely unprovoked and made war with them. This evil nation, David, the same insides that David had, where he held nothing against Saul, he also looks at the people of Ammon, and he is not their enemy. Something that is inside David's heart, he does not in any way hold things against people. It would be good if we as the people of God could somehow enter into that lifestyle. Because while we hold with all of our might to the doctrine of separation from the world, and with all of our might we want to hold to the doctrine of separation from ecumenical Christianity, we want nothing to do with the evil that ecumenical Christianity has produced. We stomp on their music and we stomp on their books and we stomp on their doctrines. We hate the stuff that they are doing. Yet, in our hearts, we do not have a personal enemy anywhere on this earth. Anywhere on this earth, we do not have a personal enemy. I think that it's way more common in Christianity, among Christians, is way more common for people to fight with the people and to be mad at the people who they have not been told to separate from, than it is for them to fight with the people who they have been told to separate from. Because if we don't have any relationship with the world, if the Christian people are a separate group of people acting independently of the world and do not have any connection with the world, they don't really mean anything to us. And we have come to understand through reading it through all of the scriptures and through the direct words of Christ that we expect the world to be unfriendly to us. But when we come among our own people, among the Christians, the people of God, there we expect something a little bit different. And then we start holding grudges against people when they mistreat us, like our best friends or our father or our wife or somebody who did something to you that you didn't think they should do. And all of a sudden, you aren't living a normal life because you have withdrawn yourself from loving people because you're angry. It didn't matter what Nahash had done to the children of Israel. It didn't matter that the nation of the Ammonites had been very hostile to the nation of Israel. It didn't matter who they were. There had been an act of kindness shown to David, and David was not their enemy, unless he had to be because they came to kill him. When they came against the nation of Israel, and he had no choice but to have war with them, that he was forced. But in this passage, a wicked man of Satan dies, and David decides he should show kindness to his son, and he sends some men to show some kindness to him. And it says in verse 3, "The princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanun their lord, thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he hath sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee to search the city and to spy it out and to overthrow it? Wherefore Hanun took David's servants and shaved off the one half of their beards and cut off their garments in the middle, even to their buttocks, and sent them away." These people weren't very nice. They were, unfortunately, about how you view some of your Christian friends, probably. They were some pretty rotten people. When they couldn't even accept a gesture of kindness from the king of Israel. But it's who they were. And when they reject David's act of kindness to them and falsely accuse David of trying to start a war with them, which, according to the biblical record, the nation of Israel never one time had showed one drop of aggression to any of the children of Ammon any time in their history. All wars with the children of Ammon were started by the Ammonites. Anyway, they falsely blame David that he came to spy out the land to overthrow it. And so they shame the three men that David sent by cutting their clothes half off and shaving their beards half off. And so David sends to meet the three men to comfort them, because David has always done this to everybody. David has always been the comforter, the person who stands up for people. So he sends to comfort the three men that were mistreated and gives them a place to stay in Jericho till their beards are grown. It must have been extremely important in those days to have beards. I can't imagine. Man, looks like Rob, you're the only sane person here. I don't know. I mean, I think I would be embarrassed to have a beard. I think I would look like one of those ugly guys. Now, Rob doesn't. He looks great in a beard. But anyway, it was obviously extremely important for them to have beards because they couldn't even come home with their beard shaved. But that's honestly, there's nothing more nor less to that than culture. Whatever we view as culture, how many of you young girls would, if you were invited to a to a uppity party somewhere in the town where you were expected to be with some of the rich people of Rhinelander and you were going to go. How many of you girls would be comfortable to go borrow clothes from an Amish girl and dress in them for the party? You're funny. I mean, that's kind of what you would feel like. Like you wouldn't dare to do it. It's because you don't have that culture. Your culture, we're kind of bound by our culture sometimes, and heaven forbid God free us from that. Many times we need to be set free from that. But that's all it was. So verse 6, more comes out. When the children of Ammon saw that they stank before David, now we've got a problem. The children of Ammon saw that they stank before David, but unfortunately they didn't know the true God, and they didn't know David. Because I can stand here as certain as ever I have been. One time in David's life, when somebody stank, he lifted up his finger to defend himself. And God sent a messenger named Abigail to stop him before he sinned. That was the only time in David's life he ever acted like that is recorded. I don't believe for a moment that the act that the children of Ammon did against these men of Israel would have caused David to retaliate in any way, because David lived by a different principle, but they didn't know it. And so their assumption was, uh-oh, we got ourselves in over our heads. We really made Israel upset now, and now we are going to get it back. So I guess there's nothing more to do than go out and have a battle right now before they come to us. We'll be the aggressors. That was the philosophy they lived by. It wasn't what was going to happen, but it's what did happen. So when they saw they stank before the children of Israel, they sent and hired the Syrians, and et cetera, et cetera. They hired all these people and they come against Israel thinking there's no point in not just simply fully accomplishing our job. Now, you know, whenever humans work outside of the realm of God, when we work in the knowledge of our own senses, we make decisions based on the arm of the flesh. We look at a project and we say, we have what we need to accomplish it. And don't think that all these other people that got hired for pay by the children of Ammon thought that they were heading into a losing situation. They looked at the situation, they said, well, we have the power. How can Israel withstand us? We have what we need to accomplish this battle, or they would have never gone into it. But the world always leaves God out of the picture. You can't judge the way a situation is going to be by what you are able to accomplish. If God decides to do something different, then something different is going to be done, regardless of all your effort or strength. So it so happens that these people agree they're coming to battle, and when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. And the children of Ammon came out and put the battle in array at the entering in of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to read all those names. I can't even pronounce. Verse 9 says, and when Joab saw that the front of the battle was against him before and behind, because two armies of people had gathered together, the Ammonites had come and all the people they had hired had come, and all of a sudden Israel comes into the midst of this where the two different armies are now on two sides of them. So now instead of having a front where the battle is taking place, now the battle is coming behind them and is going to attack them from behind as well. Job sees this. We know from the rest of the scriptures that Joab dies a wicked man. We know from the rest of the scriptures that Joab never apparently entered into a knowledge of God. He was not a good man, but he partook of the faith of David. And you will see that if you can't get that through your head about the United States of America, you won't understand anything about this country. This country has more blessing than you can ever imagine to this very day that has absolutely nothing to do with the people who are in leadership in this country today. Nothing to do with them. We are partaking of the fruits of men who feared God. That's all there is. It always happens that way in any place or nation where there is a testimony of God and where the nation has been elevated through the knowledge of God. Everybody partakes of some earthly blessings because of it. And so Joab, he was not a man of God, but he was a man of might. And when God backed what Joab did, because Joab was backing the armies of God, Joab could win any war. So he set the army of Israel into two fronts, one part under his brother and one part under himself, and they hit the nations coming at them from both sides, with the understanding that if either side had trouble, that reinforcements from the other side would come their way. And this is what Joab says. An ungodly man says, he says in verse 12, "Be of good courage and let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God. And the Lord do that which seemeth him good." You don't have to be irreligious to be ungodly. Job believed in God, but he died a sinner. He also won the battles, but he died a sinner. So it says, Joab drew near, and the people that were with him, unto the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the children of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fled, they fled also. That's kind of silly. I can understand if the children of Ammon were to flee because they were beaten before Israel, but to flee just because the Syrians fled is kind of a poor reason to flee. You'll never win a war that way. But either way, they fled. All of them fled. But it doesn't end there. Joab returned from the children of Ammon and came to Jerusalem. And when the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together. Now all of a sudden, what issue do the Syrians have with Israel now? What's the cause of war between Syria and Israel? Well, the simple thing happened here that the Syrians were hired to help the children of Ammon. And now they failed, and so now they can't leave the situation alone. I don't think, I shouldn't say this now because I didn't actually look at this at all, but it is not in my understanding that the Syrians were a part of the nations that God had ever told Israel to meddle with or to destroy. I don't recall that they were. But they gather together, and They bring the Syrians up that were beyond the river and so on, and they gather together and they come to Israel. And it says when David was told, when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel, and David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen, and smote Shobek, the captain of their host, who died there. And when all the kings that were servants to Hadadezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. Now we finally find somebody here who gets a little bit of sense in their head. When they see that Israel cannot be fought with on any front, all of a sudden, the right decision is made. We're going to make peace with Israel. It was said in the law that this was going to take place. I am not sure that this isn't the very first time in the history of the nation of Israel that actually was fulfilled, where God had said in the law that all the nations that were around them would be servants to Israel. That's what God said would happen to Israel if Israel served God. As a matter of fact, through much of the history of Israel, it was exactly the opposite way. The nations around them and the nations that were left in the land of Canaan were lords over Israel, and Israel were servants to them. Why? Because they had not obeyed God's word. But now, finally, for the first time in all the history of Israel, David has war with every single front that is against the nation, and he accomplishes complete victory over the land that God had given them, where everybody in it is either dead or at peace with Israel, so that when he dies and his son inherits the kingdom, Israel does not have an enemy. Now, you can say what you want about David being a great warrior or the nation becoming a great nation, but the fact of the matter is there was something that started first with that situation before any of those wars could take place. It first had to have a person who was right with God. Somebody who was right with God in a manner that they could lead the nation of Israel to be right with God in the same way. The nation of Israel, of course, being many people, was never entirely without its wicked people. Even in David's day, not all the people in the nation were Christians. But under David's rule, the nation of Israel served God. And it was not David's strength that caused that great peace that he got in the land, any more than it was David's strength that caused David to triumph over the giant Goliath. It was not David's strength, it was God's strength. God had promised that strength to Moses. He had promised that strength to Joshua. And he had promised that strength to the elders of Israel, and he had promised that strength to the people of Israel. But he had made a condition that went with it to all those people, and that was that the nation of Israel were to serve God. And that's where they failed. All through their history, that's where they failed. So, may I bring you to one verse before we close in Proverbs chapter 30. I'll leave you with this. Proverbs chapter 30, it says in verse 32, "If thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thine hand upon thy mouth. Surely the churning of the milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood. So the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. It is the temptation of people, once they have entered on a course, to stick with it. Once they have started something, they want to finish it. Once you have an enemy, you want to maintain that enemy. Once you are mad at somebody, you don't want to forgive that person. Once you have lifted yourself up, you get into a path where you feel like you have to continue the struggle. And this, I believe this is exactly what we saw with the children of Ammon and the children of Syria in all these wars that we had in this chapter 10. I think that's what was happening. They did foolishly. And when they did foolishly, rather than humbling themselves and sitting down and shutting their mouth as a fool, they brought it to war. The last verse says, "Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter." Now, if you take your cream you're going to make butter with, and you put it in a jar and you want to shake it or something, or you put it whatever you're going to do, you can shake it 25 times and you will not have one trace of butter in there. And if you set it down on the counter and walk away from it, it's still just cream. Because you've got to do it a few hundred times before you start forming butter. If you smack yourself in the nose once, your nose won't start bleeding. You probably hit it a few times before it starts bleeding, unless you hit it really hard. But if you work it hard enough, you can make any nose bleed. It's the way things are, guys. If you have a problem in a relationship with a person, shut your mouth. That's what the Bible says. Lay thine hand upon thy mouth. That's the way to cure bad relationships. It is time to walk away from the situation and leave it alone. Now, the problem is the score hasn't been settled yet. So, which do you want? A score settled with a bloody nose? Or no score settled and your nose still good? The forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. If you're going to force your way through the situation to make things in what your opinion is right, the consequences are that all parties involved will suffer for it. It's okay. Nobody has to believe that you're good, since the fact of the matter is you aren't. If somebody actually believes something about you that is false, you are not yet thought of as badly as you are, because they don't know a whole bunch of other things about you that are true. Because you're a bad sinner. Leave it alone. People don't have to know the truth about you. They don't have to think well about you. Let it alone. If you've done foolishly in lifting yourself up, it is time to drop it. One day, the score will settle itself. Scores settle themselves for the people who trust in God in so many different ways. I just remember a story. I just listened to John R. Rice speak a couple of times yesterday. And he tells the story about, he was invited, I believe this was Lake Louise Conference Grounds. R.G. Letourneau built that. He was speaking there, and a couple of men took him aside to talk to him. This is many years, this is early on in his ministry. A couple of men took him aside to talk to him, and they began to tell him, you know, we believe in the virgin birth of Christ, and we believe this and that and the other thing that John R. Rice was preaching so hard. We believe all the things that you say, but you have to stop the way you're preaching because you're closing doors for yourself. And this sermon was from 1962 that I was listening to John Rice. And he was speaking in a city in Ohio. He had unlimited evangelistic opportunities. He was speaking all over the country with thousands of people hearing him and with hundreds of people being saved at the meetings that he was speaking in. And these people told him, I know a person, I know a church that wanted to have you come and speak. And they got together and had a meeting about it. Should we invite John R. Rice to speak at our church? This is what these men told him at the conference. They said, should we invite John R. Rice to our church? And they said, one of the elders stood up and he said, nope. He said this and this and I disagree with him and he's not coming to this church. And they said, you just can't preach like you're preaching. It's going to close all the doors. And years later, in 1962, John R. Rice could stand up and he could talk about that situation and say, you know those two men? They were very popular men, very good preachers who told me that. He said, right now, one of them is pastor of a small church of 30 people. And the other one has gotten a few meetings here and there among the Southern Baptists to speak at with almost nobody coming to hear him. God can lift a person up. It's the people who go all out for God that God goes all out for. It's not the person who protects themselves. You think that you need to take care of your reputation and take care of your own ends and to take care of your own hurts and take care of your heart and keep your own life up and booster your image in the minds of people and let everybody think good about you? I think you're going to end up being the person that Proverbs chapter 30 is talking about when the forcing of wrath brings forth strife. You can drop it. It's okay to drop it. It doesn't matter if people think badly of you. What matters is if you are humble and walking humbly before God and before man. That's what matters. So, the next two chapters of 2 Samuel, chapters 11 and 12, we are going through the mud. It is the worst moment of David's life ever where he sins so awfully and the consequences of his sin are so dramatic. I expect to be in those chapters for a long, long time in spite of the fact that I wish I could skip them. There's a lot to learn in those chapters. So for now, we'll dismiss.